Molly Vachon. That was the French say, Vachon. This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. We're located on beautiful Vachon Island, which rises above the waters of Puget Sound between Seattle and Tacoma in the great state of Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, who's the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion and current events, laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less. But of course, he always offered a lot more. Well, we miss Brian every day. Yeah, he's gone now, what, 4 years, guys? 5 years, I think? 5 years. Yeah, boy, hard to believe. So let me introduce our Briefly panel, our legal, and the guy who's a consensus builder, a former Washington State Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General, and a Fulbright Scholar, Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. Thanks for the promotion.
Yeah. Sorry. Did you get a little money with that, dude?
No, sorry.
No. Zooming in from where, I guess he's at home, is our avid defender of justice, Mariner cyclist, top secret engineer, Kevin Jones. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Truman. And I was thinking, may the islands of Vachon Mori always rise above the waters of Puget Sound.
Ah, very nice. Okay. Well, we'll have to modify our intro just a bit. Just a bit.
Historian, came to mind as you were reading that.
There you go. Historian.
Let me break in. There's an interesting geological fact about Vachon, about rising above the water.
Yeah.
Vachon's situated between the Seattle Fault and the Tacoma Fault, which are both toe jam faults. If we think about what a toe jam is, which means Vachon is being pushed upward because the Seattle Fault's moving south and the Tacoma Fault's moving north. So Vachon's gradually being raised up. Probably slower than the water.
The sea rise.
Come up.
That's what I was just going to ask. How does that affect the sea rise?
You know? Good for a tidal wave.
Yes. Yeah. There you go. Well, that voice was that of historian, professor, party animal, and down under aficionado, Mr. Bruce Holtman, Dr. Bruce Holtman.
Oh, wow.
Let's get that straight.
I know I'm in trouble when somebody calls me that.
That's right. So, there you go.
It's good to be here.
Thank you.
Thinking about Southern Hemisphere when you walk outside and it's 30 degrees or so, time to move south.
Yeah, and you're going to do that, right?
That gig is over.
Are you talking about a little vacation?
We're trying to see whether Pam's up for going down for a month or two.
Oh, man, that would be great.
Just to visit friends and...
Yeah.
Well, Pam wants to relax and stay on Vachon. I'd be happy to accompany you.
Exactly. I was going to say, do you need anybody to carry your bags?
I'll take applications. There is a fee for applying.
Plane. I mean, come on. It's easy.
That's right.
The plane would have to be refueled multiple times.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, hey, we can't forget our fairy maven, part-time political and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreher. And she's just zooming in from Colorado, huh?
That's right. Zooming in from the mountain states.
There you go. Beautiful. Well, today we don't have a guest, so we jokingly call it the Truman Show, and they kind of put me on the spot because I have to cover for these guys. So before we get into it all, let's run around the group here and find out what we've been up to this week. Craig, how about we start with you?
Yeah, you're not covering for us. I mean, this is a show unto itself.
Oh,
it's a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to kibitz on all kinds of various subjects. It's an important, very important show, Truman.
Thank you.
Last week, of course, had Thanksgiving, which was great. Lynette and I were orphans, and we went up to some friends' houses at the north end of the island. Had a fabulous meal. It was just a wonderful group of people, delicious food. Went to the Coop on Friday. The theme was home. There were, I think, 24 different musicians and singers that that performed a lot of heartfelt songs, not the typical raucous thing that we'll hear at the Coop, but a lot of things that were kind of tearjerkers that involved either the home in the title, the lyrics, or just the concept.
Just this concept.
And it was a packed Coop on Friday.
I thought it would be, darn it. Right. And I thought of that about 9 o'clock, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
I got to send you reminders.
You do. Well, it's like once a month. At the end of the month is their big theme night, right?
Yeah. Yep. Last Friday.
Yeah, okay. I got to remember that.
And then, although they're not doing it in December because of all the holidays,
course,
and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and then the last thing was the Rebecca Kuzma celebration of life at VCA on, what was that, on Sunday, I think. Yeah, on Sunday. What a lineup. That was a full house. The place was packed. J.D. Hobson, Kevin Joyce, Cat Eggleston, Michael Mead, Pete Droege, and endless other great entertainers were there paying homage to Rebecca and her family. So that was a great gathering. Those were the high points of my week.
That's a pretty full week.
Yeah,
I would say. Geez, how about you, Bruce?
Well, like Craig, Thanksgiving, we weren't orphans. We were deluged with children and grandchildren, which is always a good thing. But a small house filled with lots of people always makes it seem more festive than it really is. But it was great.
You mean it wasn't really festive?
Oh, it's always festive. But
That's great.
The other thing is this coming, I think, next week, this coming week, my grandson, Theodore, who is becoming a dancer, he's 7 years old, but he loves dancing. He's been in the dance program at VCA for a while. Last year, he was a mouse in the Nutcracker, but he did so well, he's been promoted to be one of the gingerbread kids that come out from under the skirt.
Great.
So he is just excited as can be.
You're not going to be there by any chance, are you?
Oh, yes. Probably every performance.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Saturday, this coming Saturday, is Winterfest uptown. So come see the parade and Santa Claus and the lighting of the tree and all that kind of stuff. And then in the windstorm, our neighbor had a giant Madrona come down. Mm-hmm. So this past weekend, we played lumberjack. And thank goodness my son-in-law brought his big chainsaw over, and we cut rounds. This thing must be about 4 or 4.5 foot thick.
Really?
at the base. It's a big Madrona tree. So in about a year, we'll have a lot of good dry
firewood,
Madrona to burn. But I woke up the next morning and I could barely move.
Yeah, we know how that
is. But it's a good sore.
Yeah, right. Oh, gosh. How about you, Kevin? What you been up to?
A couple things. You know, speaking of trees, I have these cedar trees, which have now, they're going on 5 years. This is where I went to an auction for like 10 cedar trees for $15. And when I went to pick them up, there was a 1 foot diameter hanging basket that had 188 trees in them.
Oh my gosh.
The smallest ones were like literally like a number two pencil, you know, the eraser bit there.
Jeez.
Yeah. So I took them all apart and put them into pots. And now, you know, they're like, many of them are already planted on the island, but some, the ones that are still remaining in my irrigated orchard are about 2 feet tall. So anyway, I gave some away and I thought, well, I should just get some of those in the ground. You know, now's the time to do it. So I got 5 or 6 in the ground. Then I went out to look at the others that I'd planted. Some are 15 years that I got, you know, from a friend right when I retired. And a tree has amazingly, with uncanny accuracy, fallen right on, literally on the line of trees.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, there's some like, you know, 8-footers, which are now, you know, the top foot and a half is broken out, and they may come back because they got roots. But, so you get some, you win some, you lose some, I guess, in the tree biz. But at any rate, they didn't wipe all of them out. The other thing is that, you know, holiday times, the rowing club is kind of, you know, fitting in opportunities around all the major celebrations. But a few mornings ago, was one of those really like 38 degrees, sun, not a whole lot of wind, and you're walking out, you can see your breath, right? Hauling the boat out, get in the water. Eagle is chattering up in this tree.
Oh,
you know, you row across to the far side and the ducks fly out. It's just one of those beautiful, iconic, sunny, sort of pseudo-wintery days out on the water. And it was really spectacular. So that's a good memory from this week.
That's great. All right, Amy, so you're in what did you call it? The mountain state?
Yeah, the mountain. We're out here in the Rocky Mountains, and it's, you know, it's pretty Rocky Mountain out here. We do get those clear skies. We've got some snow on the ground. You know,
right.
Colorado Christmas coming our way. I'll be back this week, and then back out here for the Christmas holiday season. But it's been really nice. I mean, I love visiting my wife, but also my dog is here.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I won't say that either one of them holds a more or less special place in my heart.
What kind of dog do you have?
Careful. Yeah.
He is a German short hair pointer.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. We have come to really love the breed. His name is Red, and he's a doof, and he's super sweet, and I miss him every day.
Yeah, I got. Well,
yeah, so it's been good to see him. And then we had a good old Thanksgiving. I did a pork tenderloin for Thanksgiving.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yeah, really good. I marinated it in some like white wine and garlic paste, right? Mm. And then I did, I don't know if you've seen recently, it's become all the craze on the TikToks is you can do a bacon weave, you know, like you basically plate bacon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I did that around that. Man, it was good. It was really
good. Oh, that sounds
great. Yeah. Yeah, and then we had an epic Mario Kart battle with the nieces after a big dinner. And, you know, one of them, Annie's 10 this year, and she's coming up. She beat me a couple rounds this time.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How can you not love a bacon weave?
Oh, are you kidding?
It's a glorious thing. It really is. It's the first time I've done it. You know, I did two separate ones because – you know, the mother-in-law doesn't do garlic so much. So I had, you know, one that had marinated with the garlic and one that hadn't. So the second time I did it was, you know, practice makes progress. And it was just tightly woven. You know, it stuck around. I got some toothpicks in there. It was perfection.
That's
it was really
cool.
Good. I highly encourage folks to try it.
Does that come with a statin?
Yeah.
It should. I think the red wine, though, clears it out.
There you go.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's right.
The acidity of the red wine really clears that out.
Clears that cholesterol right out of there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So just to comment on your grandson dancing, when I was a kid back in West Texas, my mother, her cousin, taught dance, and she made me do tap. And what was it? Adagio, I think they called it. And I had to do all of that stuff, ballet. And I was, and then we had to do this performance where I was the only boy with 13 girls. Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I really didn't, but you know.
That was a little too early. Later, you would have liked it.
Later, I would have liked it, but then, you know how it is. And on your cedar trees, I got a comment on that too, mm-hmm. Kevin.
Yeah,
I had Derek Churchill, who's what's the word? Whatever it is, tree guy.
Forester.
No, not
yeah.
Forester.
Arborist.
It's a
arborist.
No, that's not it either. Anyway, he's got a degree. He's got a PhD in this, whatever it is, but it has to do with trees. Anyway, he came out to my place to do a survey, and he said, "Oh, I see you've planted all these cedar trees here." And I went, "Derek, I didn't plant any cedar trees." He said, "Cedars do not self-propagate. You have to, you know, they have to have, you've got cedars all over here." I mean, I have some really big cedars on my place. And I said, "Derek, I did not plant these trees." And he's frowning and looking. And finally I said, "I've got horses." He was, "Oh, that's it. The horses chew up the ground and that plants the seeds." I went, "Oh, well, how about that?"
There
I definitely have a volunteer cedar tree on my property that's coming in that I am so ecstatic about.
It's probably a deer did that.
Sounds right.
Yeah. But anyway, he said they don't self-propagate. So anyway, I found that interesting.
Okay. Well, Amy, I've still got a couple in the orchard. So, you know,
if you need more.
Let me.
All right.
You know how to find me.
Yeah, I do. I do. And, you know, I've heard conflicting opinions about planting trees in the winter versus the summer versus, but I know someone who's very ardent that you plant in the winter so that the trees grow deeper roots, that they're forced to go down for what they're looking for.
Well, I'd water them into the ground for a couple of years if you can, you know, through those hot days. And but anyway,
all right.
I still have a few, so let me know.
So, so my past week, of course, Thanksgiving with us. Also, we this year, second year in a row, we went out to a Salish Lodge out of Snoqualmie, and I'll tell you what, they're not one of our underwriters, but I got to put a plug in. Boy, those folks do it right. It is really a nice spot. They're completely redoing their dining room right now. So there was not, they just have a little tiny dining room. So there really wasn't enough room for all the people for Thanksgiving dinner. So believe it or not, we had our room service Thanksgiving dinner. And it was fabulous, I'm telling you. My wife and daughter both had the turkey and I had the prime rib. And it was just outstanding, I got to tell you. So there's a plug for those guys. They do it right.
Did you have breakfast down there?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And dropping the
did
honey.
Did you have the oatmeal?
No, I had the, I did have their French toast, though, which is pretty amazing. It got little pomegranate seeds on it. I mean,
the first time I went there, did the honey over your shoulder, you know, they drip it way down. Yeah. I didn't know it was coming, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, and I put my hand out.
Oh, no. Did you really?
I did.
Oh, God. So you had a handful of honey.
I got it out of the way just in time.
Oh, man. No. I'm sure they said something to you.
I'm sure they've had it happen to you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, today is December 3rd, and, you know, normally we have these international days of, you know, the turkey grind or whatever, but this one's kind of a serious one. Today is a day of persons with disabilities, International Day of Persons with Disabilities. So we need to take a moment and make sure that all of our sidewalks have got the proper ramps and everything. And
our door.
And our door, which Dr. Nurse paid for, which put us in a real nice ADA door, which is great here at the studio. So anyway, that's kind of an important day.
Can I briefly touch on, get a hot take on the third rail of Vashon politics, which is sandwich boards?
Yeah.
As we're talking about the persons with disabilities, there's you know, I put up like a, I talked with Dr. Nurse and, you know, put up like a little, you know, yard sign there at the corner. Mm-hmm. But that corner right there, it just is lousy with those sandwich boards.
Oh, and, I know.
You know, it's cool, but when they start to intrude on that walkway, that's actually a really important intersection, right? Because sure the bus stop is right there. Yep. You know, so I that's kind of like a constant little TikTok in the back of my mind, thinking about, you know, how to support those businesses, because those advertising is important, but also keep that sidewalk going.
You know, maybe we should put a reader board up there. You know, that'd be kind of cool. Kind of like
flat panel display.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. Well, there you go. Yeah, electronic. Woo.
Well,
it's tough because, you know, then like
not too sure about that.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, like people talked about it at the chamber, because then it, you know, if you do anything formal, then somebody's got to maintain it. Do you charge people for the ads for the person who maintains it?
That's
you know,
true.
Like it's that sweater that unravels pretty quickly. But at least you know, if we can find a way to keep it clear for access, that feels really important.
Yes, please do that.
Well, maybe you could put it on the casino billboard that's going in here.
Today, April 1st, or what? Right. You know?
Well, it's all, you always got to start a rumor muffin.
That's
occasion.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
is
right.
The casino going to be supported by the 24-hour airstrip?
Yeah,
that's right. And the bridge. Don't forget the bridge.
And the bridge. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, the comp plan has that 24-hour airstrip coming in. So.
Well, I like it. So, hey, for you folks who are not Vashonites, this is all Vashon local lore. So there you go. So, hey, today in history, this is an important one. 1586, Sir Thomas Harriot introduced the potato to England. He brought it from Colombia. And, you know, later, 1845 to 1852, was the potato famine in Ireland. But they would have never had that if he hadn't brought those darn things in 1586. But I found that interesting. In 1833, Oberlin College in Ohio was the first truly coeducational college opened on this date. Craig.
That rings a bell.
I would think.
I used to live in Elyria, which was right next to Oberlin, and Elyria is where the founders of Oberlin came from.
Right.
They moved from Elyria. And Oberlin, you know, is the town that started the Civil War.
Really?
Yeah. There's a book written by Nat Brandt called The Town That Started the Civil War, and it deals with the Oberlin-Wellington rescue of the runaway slave after they repealed the runaway, or after they, excuse me, after the Runaway Slave Act permitted Southern slave owners to come up to the North and recover their slaves.
Wow.
The town of Oberlin whisked a longtime resident who was a runaway slave away and kept him safe. They were all prosecuted, but virtually nobody ever spent any time in jail for except for a week or so.
Well, there you go. See, right there. And they're on the cutting edge, man.
Well, they were. There is one of the most beautiful memorials in Oberlin to the Underground Railroad. Hmm. You have these railroad tracks that literally come out of the ground.
Really?
Although I've asked people, I've had people ask me, they go, I didn't know there was a railroad under the ground there.
No. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, 1931, plot, plot, fizz, fizz, Alka-Seltzer goes on sale, which I thought was...
I got a question on this one, though, Truman.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you suppose that the manufacturers of Alka-Seltzer were like kicking themselves because they're like 5 or so days after Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
It's what inspired. I think necessity is another invention on that one.
Exactly. That's probably what inspired the whole thing right there.
And don't swallow those whole.
Exactly. You'll blow up. You'll blow up. All right. In 1953... Webb Pierce.
Here's a song you've been requesting
came it up.
Most.
Goes here we
like
go.
This. He's in the deal house now.
He's in the deal house now.
He's in the deal house
now. All right, there it is.
I told him what to try to quit playing cards.
Shooting dice. All right, there you go. Webb Pierce, 1953.
Got to add a little bit to that one. You know, that song was actually written in 1915.
Is that right?
And made famous by Jimmie Rodgers, the yodeler, in 1928. And, of course, it was really made famous, as you know, in Brother, We're Out
There. Brother, We're Out There, yeah.
By Delmar.
Yes.
Delmar, who actually sings it.
Yes,
What's his name? Tim Blake Nelson, who plays Delmar in Brothers, We're Out There. And he sings that song.
And of course, George Clooney did not sing. I saw an interview with him when they tried him out, and they said, "Well, your aunt was great, pal, but you don't cut it. You know? Just not even at all."
Presidents are exempt from that song, right?
Yeah.
It would appear that way.
Darn it. All right. So, hey, in 2019, this one is confusing to me. But in 2019, the 70th anniversary of NATO was marked by a gathering in London of world leaders and a reception by Elizabeth II at Buckingham Palace. However, the actual start of NATO was on 4th of April in 1949, which was, well, I guess that's right, isn't it? I was confused. No, it is right. That is 70 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, and well, what confused me is it's 75 years from now. That's what confused me. All right.
There you go.
Well, now I'm even more confused.
I'm confused.
Well, and why did they wait till December to have the 70th?
Well, there is that. That
was formed in April. It's
that's
like,
the question.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's the real question.
Well, that's what started
getting everybody's calendars straight.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy.
It's like trying to get us together.
Good luck. All right. So we have no small talk guest today. So I tried to come up with some topics that of things that are relevant both to Vashon, to the state, and to the national and international areas. So if we start with Vashon, so the community council is looking for board members. They are down to what, Kevin, 4 board members right now?
There are 4 stalwart women who are the board members at this point, and I've been in touch with them because I'd love for them to come onto the show and talk about their aspirational vision for how to manage a community council on this island of ours, on these islands of ours, I should say.
Yes.
But four women, and they're looking for others to join them, and so hopefully they'll join us here in the next couple of weeks, cross our fingers, and tell us kind of what they're up to.
Good. And if we have any of our listeners who are interested in serving on that board, boy, be sure. I guess they can contact you, Kevin, or who should they contact?
They should contact info at, this is an email address, info at V-MCC, Vashon Mori Community Council, .org. If you go to the V-MCC.org website and hit contact, you'll see it right there.
Excellent. So, all right.
But there is, there are multiple opportunities now because the Equity Committee's bylaws and standing rule recommendations got accepted at the last meeting of the prior board. So previously, what the council's working to do is to make sure to reach out to the island. The way I always like to say it is so that we see all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no trivial task, right, to be able to really do that. But the Equity Committee spent 3 years in that pursuit, came up with some recommendations. And one of them was to recognize that even if the board is fully staffed, there's a lot of island out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interest. There's a lot of diversity. And the idea that in order to be able to connect different communities on the island with the work of the community council, you don't need to be a board member anymore. Now, maybe I shouldn't have said that because they really want people to be board members.
Yeah.
But if the board member bar is higher than you'd like, you can also just be like a liaison to different communities. And there's like business and workforce, there's art, culture, and recreation, there's the diversity and culture, all the different cultural groups on the island, healthcare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of ways to plug in. If you just email to v-mcc or
info@vmcc.org
and say, hey, I'm curious how I can serve. I'm sure that they'll get in touch with you and let you know.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm thinking of the farmers and foresters. And, I mean, there's just a myriad of different groups. Craig?
I have to praise you on the efforts that you've done on that, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the last iteration of the community council, we did an island-wide survey, and we got to something like 2,000 people responded,
wow.
Which is, outrageous.
That's unbelievable.
That's huge.
It's huge. But they came up with three things that the community council, they wanted from a community council. And the number one thing, I won't rank them really, but one of the primary ones was participation,
mm-hmm.
ease of participation, actual participation by various segments of the island. The other two were to try to keep the island as rural as possible. And the third one was to try to maintain some local control, which, of course, mm-hmm. we can talk about at a later gathering together in a little more deep dive.
But Craig, I was asking for, when I was initially thinking about this was a little history of the community council, but you really kind of hit it right there. That was kind of the reason for the council starting, was it not?
Well, the council started many, many years ago. It was the 30s, Bruce, that the very first form. It was the chamber, I think.
Yeah, there's actually a group called the Camulus Club.
Yeah.
Kind of a club of club leaders, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of function, and the chamber would come on and off. But back in the 50s, there was actually what was called the Civic Assembly. And then the Jigsaw Plan in 1963 called for a community council, basically, what became the community council.
Mm-hmm.
And so since the 60s, it's been pretty active. And it's gone through many different kind of iterations.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, it was made up of representatives from various clubs on the island. At one point, it had regional representation, mm-hmm. so sections of the island had, mm-hmm. had sort of elected representatives, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the 80s and 90s, it just became kind of what I would call sort of a village meeting kind of thing.
A free-for-all.
Well, but the idea that anybody can come, anybody
sure.
can speak.
Sure.
And it goes back to that sort of New England, annual sort of town meeting kind
right.
of concept. And it has pluses and minuses, but so does democracy in all forms.
Indeed.
An open forum allows people to dominate the discussion at times. And of course, in 2010, the council blew apart for a whole set of reasons. But for 10 years, we didn't have a council. Mm-hmm. And then David Vogel, who had been on the council, mm-hmm. came back to the island. He said, what's happened to the council?
Yeah, got it started again.
Good. It's been going, about 4 years, I think? Well, Kevin, do you know?
Five years now.
Right, yeah.
Now, I think it might have taken a year to get all up and running. But, Diane Emerson, who's been there since day one there with David, mm-hmm. Said that she's put 5 years in. Wow. And they're two-year terms, so maybe they had a year to, get everybody seated on the board. I would like to say that in our discussions, we talked to about 40 different individuals, and it's all the way from people who are heads of companies on the island to people who are serving people who are working hard to make ends meet. I'll put it that way, and a lot of different folks. So part of it was, how do we be included? What is this council doing? Why is it important to me? How do I participate in it? But there are really a couple of themes that really struck me as being interesting, and I don't think they'll surprise people. How do we age in place here on our island, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, with our demographics, there's all kinds of issues that get wrapped up into that in terms of housing costs and affordability and transportation. Healthcare. Sustainability, right? All those things weave into that really critical spot about how are we able to stay here in this place that we love. And the other one that I thought was a little interesting is we need to maintain our voice. The notion that we don't have a municipality, we're not a city. How do we maintain our voice? How does 11,000 people not get just disappear into the hundreds of thousands or millions of King County residents? Because that's the only council we have. Mm-hmm. That was another, those two things really kind of stuck in my mind in terms of our outreach.
So the question for you then, Kevin, is how is that voice activated? I mean, does King County pay attention to this voice? And is there some liaison to the council, King County Council?
Well, there's a couple of different things. There is a Bongsto Domingo, who mm-hmm. Was attending regularly those council meetings. Mm-hmm. I think he probably still does to some extent. They were very good about getting folks connected from King County Services, from the Sheriff's Department. Mm-hmm. And I think that, if the sheriff shows up at a council meeting, it might not be because of any particular issue going on at the time. But I think that it was wise to make sure to build those relationships. Mm-hmm. And of course, the work has to continue, through our elected officials, mm-hmm. as well as making sure that issues that are important to us, we do have an opportunity to put our voices together and convey the outcome of that. So I think it's important to try to maintain that kind of visibility and relationship.
Yeah,
I wanted to jump in here because, there are some voices that were actively part of working to dismantle the previous council that are once again actively working to, be agents of dismantling this council. And part of the reason that, they are campaigning against the existence of the council is, they find it sort of quote unquote undemocratic, which I don't think is really accurate. It's one of the most democratic institutions I think I've seen operating in a lot of communities. But the irony is that without the community council, what happens is that our voice in King County government then defaults out of the hands of the public and to the agencies and the individuals who have the time and the money to speak with our county council and with representatives of government, right? So if there's no sort of open body where it doesn't matter how much money you have or, where you work, you can come and speak and there's a county representative there. If that doesn't exist, then, obviously it's good actors, right? We have people who are good actors now, the Chamber of Commerce, Vashon Household, right? Who are establishing those relationships with our government officials, and without the county council, or sorry, without the community council, you know, government access is actually restricted.
Yeah.
Right. It is sort of the one place on the island that anybody can sort of have a voice that's not just sort of an email or a call into a very, very busy chief of staff. Right. So I hope that it can, you know, continue to thrive and continue to be a place where any islander can come and choose to participate in the process.
King County has for many, many decades been looking to rural King County areas to find out what they need and what the issues are in those areas. So they've looked for organizations or
some vehicle.
And that's why back in the 90s, early 90s, they passed an ordinance called the Unincorporated Area Council Ordinance to, if you will, give more legitimacy to groups in rural areas. The unfortunate thing was, because of that and a few other things, the argument could be made that the community councils were agencies of the county and thus subject to all of the laws that are applicable to government. So there's an approach avoidance thing that the community councils had with the county. We like the fact that they recognize this, but we didn't want to become agents of them. The this always brings up the whole issue of, why don't we form our own government? Why don't we incorporate? Why don't we form our own county? Why don't we join one of the Native American tribes nearby or whatever the case may be? And that is a subject for another day. But the concept of the Unincorporated Area Council was a really good one. It basically said, you know, the major complaint people have about community councils is they don't have any authority.
Yeah.
They, you know, they don't
have any authority. Well, it gives you a voice. I mean,
it makes a huge voice. Right. Like I've told people, have you ever been to a King County Council meeting? There's nobody there.
No.
You know, and if you've got 20, 30, 40, 150 people that show up for a community council meeting, that's a lot of validity that's given to, and again, people go, oh, that doesn't represent the whole island. Well, everybody can be there now via Zoom and have their voice heard. So,
and oftentimes they have to leave their pitchforks and torches at home.
That's right. You need more than one sergeant at arms.
That's right. That's right. No, I'm very impressed that the main thing for me, I think, is the voice with King County. I mean, that allows them to hear what's going on in the island and what's important.
Yeah, what's fascinating is that Vashon's always had a troubled relationship with King County.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the earliest I can find is in 1898, there was a vote by the South End to break away from King County and join Pierce County.
Pierce County,
And it failed by only a couple votes. Hmm. But, I mean, every 5 to 10 years, there's been some kind of effort to either create a separate county, to join with Pierce County.
Kitsap. Kitsap. I remember
County,
that.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Or to incorporate the island.
Right.
And I think King County, the state of Washington, because of the Growth Management Act in the 90s, sort of slammed that door. Vashon's, because of the Growth Management Act, can't incorporate now unless we change state law. But you know, it's always been a troubled relationship. And, you know, I like the idea that, you know, the major decisions for Vashon are made either at the King County Council or the Washington State Legislature or in Washington, D.C. They're not made here.
Right. So we still need to have our voice, though. I mean, that's what's important.
Have a voice. Yes.
You know,
well, I do hope we have the opportunity for some of the board members. We've had folks on the show from the council before, right? So that's not a new thing. But, you know, we're sort of speaking our perceptions, and I'm hoping they can join us and share their perceptions with us. But we did, as a equity committee, we did recognize a representation challenge. Mm-hmm. And so part of our recommendations were to allow more people to participate in a way that is a liaison function, that if you're embedded in a community or a part of the island right now, and you have deep knowledge, whether it's the business community, whether it's the health services, the social services network, you know people, or you work with people or have association with people that, you know, we may not cross paths with every day, the people on the council. So that was the idea, is to give more people who were connected with islanders, the ability to have that sort of a little formalization of that and recognition of bring your thoughts in. Make sure that when we're talking about something on the council, that the people that you know in that community, they hear about it. So they have that opportunity to be aware of it. And so it may not address the representation challenge in the way that everybody would be happy with, but that is indeed one of the fundamental goals of what we were trying to address as an equity committee.
Well, it goes back to that same initial organization, Bruce, that you were talking about, you know, that you have to have representatives from the various entities on the island. Amy, you had something?
Yeah, I was just kind of, you know, it's representation is so hard. Direct representation, right? Mm-hmm. Direct democracy is so difficult because it, you know, in this day and age, and, you know, Truman, you were kind of talking about brain rot a little bit and how much time we're spending on our devices. And, you know, direct democracy and fair direct democracy really requires participation.
Absolutely.
You gotta get off Facebook and you gotta go to those meetings. You gotta read the articles. You gotta read the stuff, right? You gotta do some work. Democracy takes a lot of work and a lot of time. And I don't know if I'm, you know, intentionally pivoting out to your national subjects here, Truman, but, you know, the time and the energy that it takes to be a citizen, you know, an informed citizen is enormous. And I think we are suffering from a sort of atrophy of our civic brains and our civic engagement.
Exactly. And so that's a perfect segue into Kevin talking about our state legislature this year, what kinds of things are on the slate and what things might affect Vashon and what can Vashonites do.
Oh, is that a call for me to chime in?
It is.
Well, hey, just so folks know, we are 5 weeks out from the start of the legislative session. January 13th is when it kicks off. It's a long session, so it's going to deal with not only policy, but also budget as a major element of it this year round, this go round. There are about 10 bills pre-filed, even though we're still that far out. One of them is to adopt the Evergreen State as Washington's nickname. The other one is to have year-round standard time. And there's another one which is probably of concern to a number of Vashon Islanders about sanctuary policies prohibited. A state entity, law enforcement agency, or local governmental entity may not adopt or have an effect in a sanctuary policy. Or not have in effect a sanctuary policy. So at any rate, that's what's sort of hit the docket so far. But Truman, if you'd like, I did go through and look at bills that we were looking at last year that didn't make it.
I was thinking of community council. I mean, community solar is one of the questions I had, of course.
Hey, you're right there on environment, climate, community solar, and the Washington Solar Energy Industry Association is having their kickoff policy meeting on the 5th, a couple of days away. They're going to move that. And what that would do, now you can get community solar. PSC has a bunch of community solar installations. But if you want your own community solar, like if you got property and you're ready to put in some solar panels and sell electricity to people, that's not really easy. So this law would make that easier. And what it means is that, you know, if you buy into a solar farm, as a community solar, you would basically, the utility would be required then to say, oh, okay, I see that you're using electricity in your home and you're getting electricity from the solar farm. Let me mash all that together on your bill and just send you one bill, right? But right now, PSC only does that for their stuff, for example.
Well, and that this community solar, if it passes, forces that PSC to do that, correct? I mean, forces the...
It would require all the utilities who would, you know, have a community solar installation. That's my understanding. Now, the law hasn't passed, right? So we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but that's the gist. That's what the advocates want.
Good.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, I just wanted to get in there that little old Vashon Island will be introducing, going to be looking to introduce a couple bills around our Fix Our Ferries movement. And just a little preview of next week, we'll be talking about our full legislative agenda with Fix Our Ferries and Islanders for Ferry Action. But for Little Old Vashon, we're going to try to move a couple bills through and also a specific appropriation again for retention and expansion of the water taxi. So look out for that coming down the pipe in January.
Great.
And that is a water taxi that runs on biofuel. And I heard from a union fellow who is an inland boatman's union that there are discussions about how to electrify those boats. So, so that's a plus.
Indeed. We are getting deep into the water taxi world, I'll tell you what.
So would that mean that the state of Washington then would take over the water taxi from King County or?
We are not advocating for that in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. Yes. So, yes. But it would be to provide funding for those.
Correct. Yeah, we have some ambitious ideas that we're going to be asking for earmarks for that.
All right. So we don't want to get into your show for next week, but just that's a little preview, folks, for next week to hear. Mm-hmm. All right. So
one thing I'll mention, though, which is sort of related to environment, because I have been, a jonesing, if you will, for some of these apps that can link together ground transportation, water transportation, public mm-hmm. transportation. Mm-hmm. If you have Ferry Friend on your phone.
Oh, yeah.
Pop that baby open, because our own Vashon Islander, I would have to look to see what his name is.
Jordan Sultan.
Thank you. I knew somebody would know. Yep. It now does include the water taxi and the Washington State Ferries. And oh, by the way, another amazing, I hope, amazing feature. It's an experimental, but it says, we kind of know how late the boats are running. Mm-hmm. So we should be able to tell you about when that boat scheduled to leave at a certain time, when it might actually leave.
Oh, wow.
And I can tell you that when I'm coming in from the hiking trip, on the peninsula, I'm looking at, okay, here we are. Here we got two docks we can hit. When are the boats going? How long is it going to take us to get there? And then we think, okay, now we got a plan dialed in. And there was always the, are they running on time or not?
Yeah. Right? Or are they running?
By the time you're done doing all that math in your head, you're worn out. So Ferry Friend, thank you for moving in that direction.
Yeah, no, seriously, Ferry Friend is absolutely now outperforming the agency app and is excellent. The new features that he has put so much time into that and work, and it is so clever now. Like, do check out Ferry Friend. And there's some paid features now, which I highly, highly recommend getting those paid features and supporting Jordan, because he just does this because he's sort of an amazing community dude. So would love to support him. And I think The new version of the app is a champ.
Yeah, Jordan is the son of the former superintendent.
I'm looking here, and they even tell you when the ghost boat is running.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, Jordan is just knocking it out. He's a very nice young man, by the way. If you haven't met him, let's see. Where are we going to next? Well, let's see. What's our time like here? Can you give us a quick report, Kevin, on the Bruce, on the salmon return on the Elwha and Klamath rivers now that the dams have been removed? What's the what's the latest on that? Silence.
They've with the Klamath. They just took the dams out this summer, but they're already seeing salmon returning to the upper Klamath River. The Elwha is just amazing. I mean, before they built the dam, the salmon going up the Elwha River were the largest salmon in Puget Sound, over 100 pounds.
Wow.
Just huge salmon. And they actually had the foresight to build a hatchery at the base of the dam. Mm-hmm. So even though it closed off the upper river, they were actually able to keep the genetic stock going. And now that they've taken the dams out, those fish have reestablished themselves. They're not back at the 100-pound level, but they're getting up to the 40, 50-pound level. So it's pretty significant. And bringing that to Vashon, and Vashon Nature Center, of course, has been, along with the Land Trust, a major sort of a force in reestablishing the stream habitat in Judd Creek and Shingle Mill Creek, mm-hmm. and they're both getting strong salmon runs, particularly coho salmon this year. So it's pretty impressive what can happen.
I mean, the fact that they put in a culvert.
That's sort of,
I was just going to say, they put in a culvert on 204th. I mean, they just had a little culvert before, and now they've put in one of these huge culverts for fish, and it's phenomenal. We've got them clear up to 204th. I mean, that's a long way from the Sound.
Yeah, and that's the result of the tribes mm-hmm. bringing suit against the state mm-hmm. Under the Bolt decision and saying, wait a minute, you know, it's not just enough to regulate the catch. You've got to make sure that the salmon streams are passable to salmon.
Sure.
And so, you know, taking dams out is a big, impressive kind of thing, but building these fish-friendly culverts over roads so that fish can get up. It's transforming the Puget Sound salmon runs.
And before that was in, that culvert would flood and the fish were going across the road. I saw them. It's my road. I saw the fish actually going across the road. Amy, you had a comment?
I was just wondering, because sort of the counterpoint of that argument, not that I hold it, but I'm curious, how has the removal of those dams affected energy production or, you know, sort of the reason that the dams were installed?
Yeah, I mean, it has taken out some capacity for electricity, particularly the dam on the Elwha, but it was put in to provide energy for a mill in Port Angeles that no longer exist. And so, you know, I mean, what's happening, as I understand it, with both those dam removals, that they're moving into alternative energy sources to replace the energy that's being lost by the dams. And you know, dams become increasingly inefficient as they begin to silt up and, you know, all those kind of things. So it's really interesting to think about the way we've tried to engineer rivers. And ultimately, it's going to affect the Columbia River.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I don't know if you know about this, Kevin, but I recently read about there's a new turbine that's being developed that does not harm fish. And I don't know how that thing works, but you know,
takes them for a hell of a ride.
I'll bet it does. I'll bet it does. Well, but
I agree with what Bruce was saying. The you know, the original, I think that some of the comments about the dams on the Elwha were that, like, that's the electricity that made the windmills possible. And there's another interesting story about those mills that basically were built over indigenous lands and over indigenous grave sites. And just a fascinating story of the tug of war, if you will, between the indigenous rights folks as they started to put in, I think it was some big item that the state of Washington was going to build, and it might have been floating. I think it was the floating bridge. They were going to build the floats for the new floating bridge. And they said, we got lots of room here. The mill isn't running. Take whatever land you need. And they started to go in and do the work to put in that new manufacturing capability. And they started to unearth indigenous remains.
Oh, boy.
And good on the state of Washington. They did, after a while, say, we need to move to a different location. Mm-hmm. And so tribal sovereignty was a really major issue. And it's a fascinating story right there in Port Angeles.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I've got word of the year. I want to jump into that real quick. The Oxford University Press, which publishes the Oxford English Dictionary, defined their new word for 2024 is brain rot. It's supposedly the supposed deterioration of a person's mental and intellectual state, especially viewed as a result of overconsumption of material, now particularly online content, considered to be trivial or unchallenging. And I'm saying, could this be what's affected the 77 million people who voted for Trump? Is this an issue or not?
Well, it may to a certain degree, especially in light of that definition. Mm-hmm. I was just reading this morning, I think it was, or last night, the number of individuals who voted blue was down nationally by quite a bit over the 4 years ago. A lot of they say most of those people didn't vote, but many of them actually voted red, but most of them didn't vote. And they also went on in this survey, for what it's worth. I read it on the internet, so it must be true.
Must be true.
But it was that they were those people were getting their information from areas other than major news sources. Mm-hmm. They were getting them primarily from social media. So there's a information gap, if you will.
So. Yeah.
And speaking of unchallenging material, you know, like I'm a good latte liberal, and I listen to NPR and I read NPR, and you know, it's becoming less challenging, right? If we want to sort of frame it as less challenging, our national news, I think, is, you know, everyone plays to their listenership, and I've just increasingly am frustrated even with sort of outlets that are supposed to be asking the more challenging questions. You know, I am so frequently left with that was surface level. That piece was so surface level.
Exactly.
And I think the availability of challenging information is becoming, you know, harder to find, right? Where do you now go to find truly, you know, deep takes and good takes on what's going on?
Exactly.
And it's important to put it in context. I mean, it's the emergence of a new media. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, when printing developed, it was the same issue, and the same kinds of conflicts went on. You know, when radio came along, you know, when television came along, and now we're into a social media kind of world, and it's going to take it a while to sort itself out.
It's a much more of a wild, wild west, though, than the other mediums were, I think.
And read the history of the printing press, yeah. And it's sort of like, wow, I mean, it was just sort of like everything, and nobody had any control over it. Right. And that's why the government stepped in with radio and with television to set up the FCC, basically.
Right.
And, you know, I suspect that sometime within the next 2 to 5 years, we'll see something like an FCC for social media. You've got to have some kinds of regulation.
If the FCC still exists.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Brenda Carr, who's taking over, is basically in favor of getting rid of a lot of the regulation. Yeah,
it'll be the test of American democracy over the next 2 years to see how much the deep state can be rooted out.
And Kevin?
Well, I'll throw in my 2 cents on brain rot. I do think it's probably an equal opportunity invader. but for me, I think that the prescription is I need to renew my subscription. The prescription is to renew my subscription in The Economist magazine.
And
I need to go there because, you know, that is a high standard.
Oh, come on, though. You're giving the wrong takes out of that. You're going to balance it out on the other side somehow. Come on.
All right. So I have to tell you, folks, I go ahead, Bruce.
You need to subscribe to Mother Jones.
Mother Jones, there you go.
Okay, all right. I've got 2 subscriptions on my list now. Susie's listening.
So I have to tell you very quickly, I know that the IQ test is not a correct indicator of intelligence, but I have to tell you that the states with the lowest IQ scores, lowest in the 50 states is New Mexico. Next is Louisiana. Next is Mississippi. Next is Alabama. And believe it or not, fifth is Hawaii. Mm-hmm. But I found that interesting. And you were giving me a hard time about saying those folks were not uneducated, but not bright.
they're chronically underinvested and colonized.
There you go.
Those are colonized states in many ways,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Whether you imported the people you colonized or whether you just colonized the people that lived there.
That's right.
You know, it's a sad reflection of our past.
Indeed. All right. So, Amy, you already gave us a preview of next week's show. So we're really looking forward to that. By golly, we're out of time, folks. So for Bruce, Craig, Kevin, Amy, and myself, Truman, we'll bid you adieu and see you again next week.